possibility that the enemy would conduct a suicide landing on this world, an action that has no logical basis.
Yet you now believe their actions do make sense.
Correct, for I now comprehend their objective. General, this is not an invasion, it is a raid.
That...
Kostovax cut off his own words. He hated the Stratcom AI, hated relying on machines, hated their arrogance, their unspoken attitude of superiority. He paused, for what the AI said indeed explained a great deal.
A raid?
Yes, that made perfect sense. A limited-time operation, troops on the surface for a short time, then back into orbit. But,
as a demonstration, that is a costly way to send a message.
Not as a demonstration. General, the 14th Fleet did not deploy to Parchland to defend that world against a bombardment.
No, the humans do not seek to destroy a critical research effort.
No. I will now reveal classified information to you. Please isolate your cranial implant from the local network.
Without network access, I can't command the...
His implant went offline, except for the signal from the Stratcom AI.
You!
He roared, hearing his own voice echoing in his head. The enemy has identified a type of Elder artifact that can be used against our ally, the Outsider. Intel at the time pointed to Parchland as the most likely location of the artifact. However, it is now clear that intelligence was misdirection. The enemy's action here today, an action they must know will result in all-out war between our peoples, is understandable only if they intend to capture an Elder artifact that is here.
What artifact?
That is as yet unknown. However, you must at all costs prevent the enemy from leaving this world with their prize.
At all cost. That is easy for a machine to say. You suggest I prevent an enemy force which has supreme control of space around this world and has established a strong defensive perimeter around Makalva.
He used the Maxalt's name for the military base where the humans landed.
That I prevent that force from taking away some object you can't identify. You spoke of logic. I cannot destroy an object that I can't locate.
You do not have to destroy any particular Elder artifact at Makalva.
How can...
The task is simple. Destroy all of them. Kostovax sucked in a breath.
You cannot be suggesting.
It's the only way to be sure.
Chapter 39. Katie Frey slapped the button to retract the dropship's rear ramp as the last operator's boots pounded past her and up into the cargo area. The ramp was only halfway retracted when her suit computer warned her the surface she was standing on was unstable. The pilots had ordered the tether to begin reeling the Panther up toward the balloon. Caught by the breeze, the Panther wobbled as it cleared the trees at the edge of the field and was in undisturbed air. The stealth bubble around them would adjust to compensate for the wind. She wasn't concerned about the initial ascent phase of the operation.
Boots off the ground,
the pilot announced, unnecessary but following protocol. The nanocord tether would shorten steadily, pulling the Panther upward while the balloon sought a favorable wind to drift them away from the LZ. The balloon was barely visible by itself. Wrapped in its own stealth field, it couldn't be detected. The Panthers, the spacecraft carrying teams Razor, Sword, and Tiger, had their own stealth capabilities. They wouldn't be seen. No enemy aircraft were reported in the area. The explosion at the armory had been noticed, and that prompted a brief moment of terror as she sprinted back to the landing zone before Skippy chuckled in her ear.
Relax. I've got this covered.
How?
Her voice had been shaky from her being bumped and jostled as the suit leapt over obstacles and raced onward.
I fed the local AI fake video of over-eager reservists breaching security at the armory. They weren't happy about waiting for senior officers to unlock the toys. The Stratcom AI is disgusted. It is not concerned about anything happening on this hemisphere.
Reservists had arrived at the armory, eight of them seeing clear signs that something was very wrong. Skippy had remotely closed the front door and activated the stun gas. All eight would be sleeping long after Task Force Hammer jumped away. With the front door closed and properly locked, reservists arriving for active duty would not see anything unusual until an officer showed up with the proper access codes, and Skippy was making sure those officers were held up in snarled traffic. They had gotten to the surface, to the armory, secured the biscuit, and were now aloft. All easy phases of the operation executed with textbook precision. So far, everything had gone according to plan. So far, everything had been easy. The dangerous phase of the op would commence when the Panthers had to release from the balloons, fire up their engines, and climb into orbit. She recalled a nugget of wisdom Bishop had said as she strapped into her seat in the cabin. Something gets fucked up on every op. He had gone on to add that the test of a leader is how they react when plans go awry. But she focused on the first part of his statement. The merry band of pirates always got thrown into the shit. If it wasn't an elder killbot under the wreckage of a moonbase, it was a cute little squirrelbot. So, she asked herself, what will go wrong this time? Major Cheryl Crook, callsign Lady Di for her customary blonde bob haircut, resisted the urge to rest her right hand on the Panther's throttle or to order the ship's computer to run yet another diagnostic. She had not been outside to perform a pre-flight check since the skids touched dirt, nor had she been able to shut all the systems down and restart them one by one in the proper sequence. If it worked on the way down, she reminded herself, it should work just fine on the way up. Besides, testing everything every time only added cycles to equipment that all had a limited service life. Colonel Perkins had offered her a choice of Panthers to fly. Crook had delegated that choice to her crew chief. That was why she was flying tail number Alpha Zulu. It had recently been through a complete maintenance cycle and had been back on the flight line long enough for each component to prove it worked over dozens of cycles. She had taken the Panther to the surface loaded with a UN Army Ranger team, and Alpha Zulu was one of the designated go-birds for bringing the Watsis up into orbit. The Rangers had signaled the Watsis was secured and were proceeding to her ship at best speed. Two other go-birds were closer to the Rangers, but the enemy was making a push in that area, so the Rangers were uncharacteristically running in the opposite direction from trouble. She saw mech-suited figures running up the back ramp before the instruments reported an increase in the spacecraft's mass. The ramp was already closing when the last two Rangers leapt up through the gap and their leader shouted, "We're in! Go, go, go!" In spite of the urgent orders, Lady Di did not advance the belly jet throttles. 3, 4, 6 other Panthers lifted off, pointing their noses in the air and activating stealth fields. They were accompanied by hundreds of decoy and sensor-jamming drones, a breathtaking sigh that erupted from all around her. 3, 2, 1, her co-pilot called out the countdown from the left-hand seat. Fly high. The Panther smoothly lifted off, the nose coming up, and she didn't fire up the main engines until the stealth field was fully active and her ship was surrounded by a cloud of sensor-confusing chaff. Portable anti-aircraft missiles came out of nowhere, twisting wildly across the sky, seeking easy prey, while the dropships were flying relatively low and slow. The defensive autocannons were set on automatic and instructed not to shoot unless it was absolutely necessary. A few drones were equipped with maser cannons to mimic the action of a dropship. Most weren't. Lighting off the autocannons would confirm a particular target was not a decoy, and the Air Force manual advised to avoid doing that. Duh. It was a numbers game. Flood the defenses with stealth targets and trust that the majority of enemy weapons would lock in on a decoy. To her left, three explosions rocked the sky. The silhouette of a Panther did not emerge from a fireball. The missiles had struck decoys. More dropships and decoys were launching below her. With every second, her bird became more anonymous. Passing through 2,000 meters and climbing, another 5,000 meters of altitude, and she would be within the protection of the Combat Air Patrol dropship fighters. The enemy didn't have the numbers to shoot down every dropship in the area. So far, so good. U.S. Air Force Major Joel Dutch Verhoef chafed at waiting, 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 and doing nothing, while his Eagle dropship fighter lazily circled in stealth above the base designated Delta 7. After the first few pucker-inducing minutes, the battle for the sky over Delta 7 had become the opposite of the target-rich environment he had been told to expect. Opposition on the ground and from dirt-side air defenses had been much stronger than in the simulations, so the fucked-up nature of war-planning fuck-ups had balanced out. It was the circle of life. Or death, Joel thought, checking his displays to see how much static electricity clung to the hull. The air, as far as he could see, fairly crackled with electricity, lightning bolts arcing from one dissipating mushroom cloud to the other and from cloud to ground. Holy shit. DEFCOM really had nuked an alien world. That more than anything told him the mission of Task Force Hammer was deadly serious and absolutely necessary. The fate of the entire galaxy might depend on the outcome of the battle raging below him while he waited for something to shoot at. Or for someone to shoot at him. Another glance at the display confirmed his six buddy drones were still flying in formation with him. The Eaglets were force multipliers for his spacecraft, and not infrequently the pilots of DFA-41 Squadron wondered whether the AI-controlled buddy spacecraft would perform better on their own. Fuck that. Joel had learned that while drones could fly harder and faster, they still lacked judgment and imagination. Every year when budgets were being outlined and inevitably cut, DEFCOM leadership questioned whether there was still a need for fighter spacecraft. The Eagles and their pilots looked great on recruiting posters, but glamour didn't deliver ordnance on target. Were fighters useful? Operation Olympic proved hell yes, they were still indeed. The next time someone... There was the signal. The dropships below were taking off, the lead birds attracting the attention of enemy missiles that should not have been there. He zoomed in a fuzzy video image that showed three small missiles racing upward from under an overturned enemy truck. How the hell had the soldiers down there missed enemy inside the perimeter? That wasn't his problem. His job was to escort the dropships up into orbit, to take fire if necessary. One of those Panthers carried the Wutzes. He didn't know which one. He didn't have a need to know. Toggling off the autopilot, he advanced the throttles and raced away and upward to provide high cover. Anti-aircraft batteries around Makalva, those that survived being targeted by fighter spacecraft, had remained hidden and held their fire, waiting for the moment they could do something useful, something that would be worth the inevitable missiles and maser fire that would instantly target the launch sites. When two dozen United Nations dropships sprang off the ground, the battery commanders saw their opportunity and launched everything they had. Missiles and drones were flying in and from every direction, creating an even more confused and chaotic mess, under the pall of thick black smoke and the overhanging tops of the mushroom clouds that ringed the area. In the fog of battle, missile against missile and missile against drone, no one noticed a single slow and stealthy cruise missile flying low and hugging the terrain. The missile was not especially large. It was heavy, the warhead's mass close to the cruise missile's carrying limit. It wasn't able to maneuver as energetically as its AI mind would have liked, exposing itself as it soared over ridges. That was an unavoidable risk, considered acceptable by those in command. The missile AI knew that if it was not able to perform the impossible, it would get the blame. There was one close call when an enemy active sensor pulse from orbit swept over it, passed on, then came back. Were enemy ships tracking the stealthy object? Yes, the pulse came back. Focused, steady, locked on. No matter, it was close enough to the target, the Makalva cavalry base. No detonator was required. To activate the weapon, the AI simply released the containment field. The flash traveled at the speed of light, blinding her instruments for a crucial moment and throwing several systems offline, such as the stealth field and the energy shield. Panther Alpha Zulu was exposed and vulnerable, but still flight-worthy and flying. The happy situation wouldn't last for long. The hypersonic shockwave followed closely behind the flash. Major Clark didn't know how long the time lag was other than quick. When it hit, she had no warning. Instruments were resetting, and so many alarms were lit up and blaring, she was paying attention only to the most critical failures. The Panther was slammed from behind, the tail shearing off moments before the cabin rippled and split open. Her last thought was that she could still hold the aircraft together. Then the AI triggered the ejection capsule. "What's the plan?" Dave Chaika asked both of the Coulters, one eye on the map in his visor. They were in a gully with the Delta 7 base behind a ridge. Beyond the other lip of the gully was the crash site, and beyond that, fairly open ground where two Maxulx infantry squads who were alternately leapfrogging and providing cover for each other. "We go over the top?" He gestured to the lip of the ridge. "We're in no man's land. World War I shit. They have the numbers and the firepower." "Hey," Jesse pointed a finger at Shauna, then tapped his chest. "There's two of us and 12 of you," he indicated the mercenary headquarters group. "How about you tell us the plan, boss man?" "Shit." Dave almost spat in his helmet. He could open the faceplate. He had done that briefly. Big mistake. The atomic compression weapons had scorched the landscape. Flakes of soot were still falling like black snow. The air smelled burnt. "We don't have time for..." A blinding flash knocked him to the ground. "What the f—" Joel was spared the worst effect of the flash that was behind since his spacecraft was flying away from the blast on a course to intercept the dropships. He was also 60 kilometers from the blast at 20,000 meters altitude, moving at supersonic speed. For a heart-stopping moment, he thought the displays blanking out were instrument failure or a problem with his helmet visor. That fear was wiped away when he realized he couldn't see anything beyond the helmet faceplate that had gone completely black. Overflash. Someone had dropped a nuke. Before he could think, the Eagle's AI took action, surging the engines to full power. He felt an elephant sitting on his chest, the flight suit clamped down to prevent blood draining from his head, and nanoparticles released additional oxygen. His vision narrowed anyway to a bright spot directly in front of him as the Eagle raced up and away from the shockwave. In Reed's office, my attention was focused on the large hologram that tracked the three Starforce dropships that were near the point when they would have to release from the balloon tethers and power up their engines for the climb to orbit. The three balloons had expanded to their maximum size and couldn't attain any higher altitude. Team Tiger's balloon was already sinking slowly. Though there wasn't anything I could actually do at the moment, I was entirely focused on those three spacecraft. And to be truthful, I was watching Team Razor's ship with special interest. That Panther carried the biscuit, the Collector. We had to... A bright flash, then complete darkness from the other hologram made me blink, the display that showed the tactical situation at Makalvar. At first, I wasn't overly concerned. An explosion might have knocked a sensor offline. Then the hologram flickered to show a feed from orbit. A blinding flash near the southern edge of the Makalvar base perimeter and an immediate mushroom cloud. What the f... Joe! Skippy's avatar appeared in the center of the main hologram. The Maxalts just detonated an atomic compression device at Makalvar. They... I was so stunned I couldn't speak, watching in horror as the mushroom cloud boiled up toward the orbital camera that was providing the feed. Oh my... They nuked their own fucking base? Technically it wasn't theirs anymore, said the King of Empathy. How? My throat was too dry. I had screwed up. Never had I imagined the Maxalts would drop a nuke on their own territory. Should I have anticipated that move? We had opened the door by dropping AC weapons on their bases, though we deployed those devices to knock out shields, not to destroy everything. Our orbital bombardment once the shields were down were precision strikes against airfields, anti-aircraft batteries, armories, anything that could provide the enemy with a defense or allow them to move out toward Makalvar. We had not hit barracks, base housing, dining facilities, or office buildings. There were collateral casualties, of course, probably including civilian contractors on base at that fateful moment, but we hadn't nuked an unprotected site. The Maxalts had. How many? I managed to say. Skippy understood my question. Joe, you don't need to know about casualties. You don't want to know. The ground force is effectively gone. Dropships. I licked my dry lips. Panthers. 26 of them lifted off before... They weren't far enough from the blast. All of the dropships are down. Those that I can even identify. The office door slid open. Reed stood there, her face reflecting the shock I felt. We all felt. Sir, the what's this? It was in Panther Alpha Zulu, part of DAT-38 squadron assigned to the Flying Dutchman. The what's this? The Collector. The fake that Hammer Force was supposed to secure. Oh, yeah. Sir? She stepped into the office and slapped the button to close the door. Pull yourself together. We need you to lead us out of this mess. The biscuit. I waved at the larger hologram, unable to tear my eyes away from the growing mushroom cloud that was beginning to flatten at the top. It is still... Yes, sir. The Star Force could be exposed if the enemy believes we have given up on securing the Watsis. Huh? What are you suggesting? We need to launch an immediate SAR effort to find the Watsis. That thing is worthless, I exploded. The enemy doesn't know that,
But they will, unless we make every effort to reach the crash site. Hammer Force can send dropships down from ships in low orbit, but if anyone is left alive down there, you have to send them toward the Alpha Zulu crash site.
She's right, Joe. Skippy chided me gently. I have identified where the Watsis fell. The container is intact.
As long as the enemy believes our objective is to obtain the Watsis, they won't be looking elsewhere, Reed added.
The enemy doesn't know about the Watsis, I insisted. Skippy sighed. The Max Hulks just nuked Mukulva. It's a good bet their Stratcom AI has guessed our objective.
Shit. Okay.
Shit, I'll contact Perkins. She's dealing with a lot of shit right now, Joe. She is the commander of a ground force that is combat ineffective. I have identified a UN unit that is 4.5 kilometers from the Watsis crash site.
Can they move out?
They just got nuked. They were protected from the blast by distance and terrain on the backside of a slope, and they have powered armor.
Okay.
I reached for the coffee cup, needing liquid for my dry mouth. Not coffee. More caffeine was the last thing I needed right then. Connect me.
I have to give a warning first. You will not like this.
Internal oxygen supply is adequate for 37 minutes.
A flat, metallic voice sounded in Dave's ear. Who the hell was...
What?
He croaked out.
Something was stuck in his throat. His head hurt. A flashing light.
What was that?
Oh, yes. He was in a mech suit. The light was a status indicator. It was flashing green. That was good.
Wasn't it?
If the suit was active and the visor functional, why couldn't he see anything?
That's right, he remembered an intense flash before.
Before. He tried to move and felt a strong resistance.
Suit. Status.
All systems nominal. Internal oxygen is currently active.
Why isn't the air filtration system online?
This unit is currently buried under 1.5 meters of rock and soil.
Dave experienced sheer terror. Buried alive.
Can I get out? He stammered.
Safety limits and suit motors might be exceeded, the emotionless voice warned.
I don't care about that. Get me out of here.
He resisted the urge to move on his own. He didn't even know which direction was up. To his right, apparently. That arm and leg twitched, slowly at first, then becoming a rapid, brain-jarring vibration. The suit was shaking itself free, not relying on brute strength. The arm gradually lifted away from his torso. He felt the hand come free. Flailing the hand around, he tried to find something to hold on to for... Something grasped his hand. Someone was up there. They tugged steadily, not using a lot of force. He was pulled toward the surface, wincing at the overly bright light. Shauna had hold of his hand. Rolling to his knees, he shook dirt off easily, not much stuck to the exterior of the suit. All around him, mech-suited figures were sitting upright, walking around stiffly, helping to dig out those still buried by the collapsed sides of the gully. The gully was only half as deep as it had been.
Thanks.
He staggered to his feet, waving at Jakes, who was lifting another Verdcris from under a boulder. Jesse waved to him. From there, Master Sergeant Coulter was checking a soldier whose armored wrist appeared to be bent.
Any clue what happened?
She shook her head. I was hoping you could tell me. Artillery?
No way.
It was his turn for a head shake.
What it was, it wasn't localized.
We... A familiar voice interrupted.
Dave?
Joe?
Where are...
We can catch up later. Listen, I need you to do something. It's important.
Joe, what the fuck happened here?
A heavy sigh.
I'm sorry. The kiddies popped a nuke on Mukulva.
Holy shit. I know this is a shock. Please, listen to me. The Watsis, it went down. The dropship carrying it got hit by the shockwave. Skippy thinks the enemy guessed we landed to capture some gizmo, and since they didn't know what we were after, they nuked the entire site to be sure. They didn't get it. The Watsis is secure in a container about 4.5 clicks from you, north-northwest. We need you to get it. Find it, move it to a secure LZ where it can be recovered.
Dave, this is important.
Joe, his voice was shaky.
I hear you, but there's only 14 of us here. Less now. We have some blast damage.
There were 2 full squads of Max Hulk's infantry to our...
Skippy tells me there were 2 squads. They're all KIA. You got lucky being in that gully. It protected you from the shockwave. The kiddies got the full force of it. There's no organized opposition between you and the Wutzes. You need to...
Skippy broke in.
Joe, the enemy was prepared to exploit the situation. They have aircraft approaching, including cavalry units. I do not believe they know the location of the Wutzes yet, but it is likely only a matter of time.
Dave?
Joe will do it. Can you give us any cover?
There isn't much in the air right now. I'll see what I can do about close base support, but targeting from up here is going to be difficult.
We'll get moving ASAP.
Dave frowned at the number of people who were limping from suit damage. Several soldiers were running scans of the soil to find their missing rifles.
Joe, my people at Makalva.
Are they all?
Dave, don't think about it.
Not now.
I am a worthless, lying sack of shit. I had just lied to one of my oldest friends, lied to send him probably into a trap, made him a target. When Dave, Jesse, and I were a fire team together with Sergeant Koch, we had trusted each other with our lives. Now, Ski and Cornpone couldn't trust me at all. They needed close space support. I had a call to make. But first, Skippy, I need you to do a dirty, rotten thing, and I'm not talking about the kind of scams you enjoy.
You're scaring me, Joe.
Asking Dave to get the bullshit Wutzes does us no good unless the enemy, that Stratcom AI, knows we're sending people to get the thing. Otherwise, they'll assume they destroyed anything of value to us and will start looking for targets of opportunity elsewhere, like dropships climbing into orbit on the other side of the planet.
I do not like the sound of this. What do you want me to do, sell out your friends? I can't believe you would do that. This whole op was your idea.
I clamped my mouth shut. Arguing about assigning blame wouldn't get us anywhere. Leak a message, or make it sound like some panicky specialist transmitted in the clear that the Wutzes is down and teams are approaching the crash site. Provide only very vague coordinates. There have to be several groups of humans stumbling around down there. The enemy won't know which people are tasked to recover the Wutzes. They will see that someone is moving out. You will be painting a target on your friends. They are already targets. I don't expect them to do anything, and Dave is smart. He won't keep going if the odds are impossible.
Joe, this truly is a dirty, rotten thing.
Just do it, please. I stood up. Don't tell anyone. Connect me to Admiral Allard directly, please. Then I'm going to the bridge. I got us into this mess. I need to get us out of it.
The destroyer Thomas Paine was assigned to UN Special Operations Command, and as a SOCOM asset had been held back from the Hammer Force assault as a reserve parked 12 light seconds away. The Paine was not needed until it was needed, and then it would be very much needed, like right then. The order had come from Admiral Allard, though Colonel Chen knew the signature of a Joe Bishop plan when she saw it.
"This is insane, even for the pirates," she muttered.
"What was that, ma'am?"
Horexo asked without looking up from his console.
"Remind me to put in for a nice, cozy, dirtside job when we get back to Earth."
That time he did glance at her. "You would be bored in a week."
"Bored and alive. You know why our namesake is famous?"
"Who?"
He was back, tap, tap, tapping away on his console, preparing the destroyer for a jump. And the aftermath.
"Thomas Paine. He was an Enlightenment-era writer. He was most well-known for a pamphlet titled Common Sense."
"Which," Horexo guessed her meaning, "is the opposite of what we're doing here now?"
"Exactly."
Paine also wrote, "The harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph." With a grimace, she shook her head.
"Also remind me never to assign a philosophy major as my executive officer."
"My minor was in philosophy," he corrected her. "Colonel, the ship is ready in all respects."
"Except I forgot a change of underwear."
"Pilot," she gestured. "Let's get this over with. Jump when ready."
The Thomas Paine disappeared in a burst of gamma rays.
"Dave," Bishop called again. "Grab some real estate."
Chaika froze, holding up a fist in a halt gesture.
"Joe, we can't stop here. There are enemy aircraft all around. Get down!"
Dave didn't need to wait for a written invitation. Waving both hands in a down gesture, he fell onto his chest and wondered what trouble Bishop was getting him into next. Task Force orbital sensors reported large numbers of enemy aircraft, drones, and cruise missiles fast approaching his position without being able to identify exact vectors of the threats.
The roiling, static-charged clouds were making it difficult for sensors in space to lock onto stealth flying objects, so while the warships above wanted to shoot, they had no firing solutions. What did Bishop intend to... The suit screamed a warning alarm. Gamma radiation. A lot of it. The source was hot and close. What the... The Thomas Paine emerged from jump at 7,000 meters altitude, moving at Mach 9 relative to the surface southeast of Makalva. For a few seconds, the massive ship simply bored a superheated hole through the already abused air. The active sensors pulsed powerful energies, burning through aircraft stealth fields that were already dealing with intense static. Defensive cannons set on auto mode began to chatter in every direction other than down. Targets on the ground were painted by maser beams set to fire in a cone for maximum coverage. Dispersing the coherent microwaves into a cone decreased the energy delivered per centimeter. But when the maser projectors were the weapons of a starship, rotten kitties and even the toughest mech suits boiled alive and exploded inside their armor. The audio cut out in Dave's helmet. He still heard a deep rumbling sound right through his bones. The longest clap of thunder ever imaginable. A roaring that shook his brain. Unable to resist curiosity, he rolled onto his back and squinted at the sight of something burning an orange streak through the dark clouds heading away from him and moving fast. What was the Air Force doing up? His visor lit up with the outline of a UN Navy destroyer. No regular Navy. SOCOM. The Thomas Paine. The destroyer had completed its pass and was clawing for altitude, the rumble turning into a roar as the starship's main engines kicked in full emergency thrust. Jesse staggered to his feet, then jumped, pointing to the retreating starship, pumping a fist.
Fuck yeah! That's what I call close space support!
Jates stared at Dave.
You humans are certifiably insane.
In a good way, Dave nodded. All right, people, the Navy just cleared the road. Let's move out before the kiddies get their shit together.
Chapter 40. Back on Valkyrie's bridge, because I was again commanding and not just observing, I pumped a fist and mouthed a silent prayer for Chen to get her struggling ship back into orbit. The odds were slightly in her favor as long as nothing vital broke, and the enemy didn't expend any munitions on hitting a target that was retreating. It was a long way to jump altitude. The Paine's crew would have to settle for low orbit, check every system for damage, and only then increase speed to climb to jump distance. The destroyer would be able to jump away. The SD network's damping field was tragically offline due to some jerks being not cool. Those same jerks also knocked out the satellites which had generated the disruption field that prevented ships from jumping into orbit. With that field gone, destroyers and frigates could quickly reposition to cover the Thomas Paine if needed. That was a good thing for us. You know what the problem is of disabling a disruption field? Anyone can jump in. Altitude 22,000 meters, speed Mach 14. Reduced to 80% thrust, Chen ordered with an eye on the Q meter of the display. Q was an engineering term for dynamic pressure, and the strain meter was warming the ship's structure was almost at the design limit. Forward shields were holding barely, only by shunting power from other shield generators. To continue maximum thrust would collapse the shields and pancake the forward hull into amidships like an accordion. Dial it back for only a moment, she told herself, thinking like a pilot. Thinner air was above them. At 30,000 meters above the dirt, they could throttle up again. The threat board was showing orange, no red. Vague hints of threats, nothing certain. Jumping the ship down deep in the troposphere had been a surprise, caught the enemy unprepared. The air defense systems hadn't been ready to shoot at a starship, so they hadn't. 24,000 meters, speed dialed back to Mach 13. Against the odds, they were going to make it, to reach. Warnings flashed on the display. Alarms blared. Gamma ray bursts in orbit. A lot of them. The IFF system wasted no time in identifying friend or foe. Foe. The 14th Fleet was back. The assault carriers were hit first, though the 14th Fleet's commander had to know those ships were nearly empty of dropships and ground pounders. Battleships with interlocking energy shields protected the vulnerable carriers from weapons fire coming from the planet. Only their own shields defended the Gator Navy ships from attacks coming in from higher orbit.
The Baltic Sea was struck first, taking maser cannon bolts, followed closely by railgun darts fired by the big guns of 14th Fleet battleships. The Baltic Sea was gone in a flash, energy released from jump drive capacitors. The Adriatic Sea lasted a heart-stopping minute longer, maneuvering wildly to throw off the enemy's aim to no avail. Shot full of holes, engines offline, the ship cracked in half when hot warhead fragments penetrated a missile magazine. Two assault carriers gone in the blink of an eye. The Flying Dutchman fared marginally better. As the command and control platform for the assault force, it was protected above by four light cruisers specialized as space defense ships with stronger shields and additional autocannons. More than half of the incoming railgun darts were intercepted and shattered, so the impacts were spread out and fragments splattered harmlessly against the shields. The lesser quantity of the 62 darts were not intercepted and did slam into the shields. 14 punched through weak spots created by darts ahead of them. High-speed projectiles that lost a bit of kinetic energy while passing through the shields still possessed enough speed to tear into the assault carrier's light armor plating. Armor that was designed to protect against space debris and missiles detonating nearby, not from battleship weapons that scored direct hits. The blessing was all 14 darts plunged into the topside armor and emerged out the bottom, having lost much momentum and without striking anything vital to the ship's operation. Dozens of crew were killed when multiple darts tore through docking bays top to bottom, created jagged holes that air shrieked through to escape. A search and rescue dropship was struck and exploded, showering a docking bay with hot shrapnel. That was just the first salvo of darts. Maser bolts struck the unprotected hull where shields were down, and missiles bored in, twisting and jinking to defensive fire. It was a missile that severed a power conduit and shut down two main engines. That sealed the ship's fate.
"Captain Bonsu,"
Nagatha's voice was calm as usual.
"I believe the ship is, as you would say, going down, falling into the atmosphere."
Colonel Derek Bonsu had reached the same conclusion, as did everyone who had a view of the main bridge display. The Dutchman had not actually been in orbit when the 14th Fleet arrived. Derek had instructed the pilots to use the main engines to essentially hover over Maklava, passing over the landing site, but moving too slowly for speed to stop the ship from falling. It was a judgment call, taking a slight risk to the ship to reduce the flight time of dropships coming back up from the surface. The environment on the surface was contested. The battle space above the atmosphere was not. Task Force Hammer had supreme control of orbit and beyond, until the 14th Fleet returned. However the hell that happened. Derek wasted no time with sentimental thoughts. Jabbing a thumb down to activate the ship-wide intercom system, he announced as clearly and calmly as he could manage.
"This is the captain speaking. All hands, abandon ship. Repeat, all hands, abandon ship.
Godspeed to you," he added. Tapping his phone, he called the ship's CAG, who at the moment had very little air group to command.
"Irene, get into a Panther and get out of here ASAP."
Her reply was muffled.
"We have a fire down here. Irene, get off the ship, now, however you can."
A pause, then,
"I'll see you dirtside."
He thought that was unlikely. With a catch in his voice, he replied,
"I'll see you soon. I love you." And cut the call.
To the bridge crew, who were all staring at him, he gestured to the doorway. "Move!" No one left their stations. The executive officer cleared her throat.
"Sir, from here we can coordinate the
communication is spotty."
He gestured to the main display that was showing only orange and red warning lights on a schematic of the ship.
"Throughout the ship. What you all need to do is get to escape pods and pass the word to anyone who didn't hear my order.
The ship rocked again, followed immediately by a harder shock, a secondary explosion. Something important had been hit.
"Get out of here!"
Led by the reluctant XO, the bridge crew began filing out the doorway, walking, then beginning to run as the deck tilted. Artificial gravity was fading. The lights flickered. Red emergency lights snapped on. He sat, staring at nothing, while the ship rocked from impacts, tumbling slowly.
"Colonel Bonsu?"
Nagatha's avatar appeared, an effect she rarely manifested in public areas of the ship.
"Please do not disappoint me."
"The Flying Dutchman survived impossible odds more times than I can count. Now under my command, I'm losing the ship. I'd say I have disappointed everyone."
No, you have not, dear. You know that I selected you for this command.
Derek nodded glumly. The Navy had put forth a list of candidates to be captain of the former Star Carrier, but the ship's AI had stated firmly that she wanted only Derek Bonsu in command. No one in DEFCOM leadership wished to argue with the Lady Nagatha.
Hey, you might have made a mistake there.
The mistake, if there was one, is entirely the fault of Joseph Bishop, though I am loath to criticize a man I so admire. Colonel, by disappointment, I meant I hope you are not intending to go down with the ship.
That's tradition.
That was tradition, and it was always stupid. Your military has invested much time, effort, and money into training you for leadership. With the outsider yet to be defeated, the Navy needs capable, experienced commanders more than ever.
Yeah, I hear you. He pulled the lever to release the chair's safety straps. I wasn't going down with the ship. Irene would kill me if I ever did something so foolish.
Good. The Avatar clapped her hands. I suggest you move with alacrity.
Alacrity, he thought. Who uses words like that?
General Perkins. Is she? Her people are bringing her to an escape pod, over her objections.
Derek could understand that. The mission was a failure. The Watsis lost. The ground force wiped out by a nuke. Emily's husband reported missing and out of contact. She had to be in shock. She should not be in command, not that she had any force left to issue orders to.
What about you? Nagatha, there is no escape pod for your corps. This ship was built around you.
A fact I am painfully aware of. What can I say? I had a good run.
The hologram flickered.
An experience I will cherish forever, or for approximately the next 11 minutes until the ship breaks apart.
Tears stung Derek's eyes. He wiped them away angrily. Reaching out a hand, he felt a tingle from the hologram.
It has been, his voice choked up, an honor to serve with you.
I will see you on the other side, dear. Now please, go.
He half ran, half swam in the fading gravity, ducking through the bridge blast door that was automatically sliding shut.
Where the fuck did they come from?
Reed screeched, trying to rise from her chair and gesturing at the display that showed far too many enemy ships jumping into orbit. The Baltic Sea was already an expanding sphere of charged particles. The Adriatic Sea and the Flying Dutchman were taking hits. Her question had been rhetorical, though addressed mostly at me.
The Outsider, I muttered, stunned.
She stared at me, so I added, it knew we were coming here. Somehow it knew.
No way, Joe,
Skippy sniffed. Though he was distracted, the ginormous holographic hat not moving when the rest of the Avatar did.
Our communications security is airtight.
Ours is, yes. What about the spiders?
They... Maybe... Shit!
The Dutchman. Reed zoomed in on that ship. We can protect... No. We stick to the plan. I cut her off. We stick to the plan or all of this is for nothing. There were 3 dropships climbing into orbit. We need to protect them. Reed took a deep breath, tamping down her anger.
Anything we do to help will only attract attention to them.
We wait until they reach orbit. That's the plan, I insisted. Her knuckles turned white as she gripped the armrest. Waiting, doing nothing was not in her nature. She did it anyway, acknowledging me with a curt nod. We would stick to the plan. Frey called.
General Bishop? The pilots tell me we have a Maxalt fleet in orbit now?
Uninvited guests. Frey, there is no change. Proceed as planned. The words sounded hollow to my ears.
Understood.
Frey ended the call.
Sir.
Reed pointed to the display.
The plan didn't include squadrons of enemy ships crashing the party. There are 4 cruisers converging on the Star Force's trajectory.
I see that. We... That's when the plan was overcome by events. The dropship carrying Star Team Sword had the bad luck. It was just pure rotten luck of being painted by a narrow active sensor beam from a Maxalt battleship.
That ship's sensors had been aimed at a Hammer Force battleship, the Barcelona, and when the Barcelona maneuvered wildly to avoid a salvo of railgun darts, the beam raced onward at the speed of light, briefly illuminating the particles of plasma that clung to the Panther's hull. Briefly, the flight path of the Panther only intersected the beam for half a millisecond before the spacecraft moved upward and the beam panned to the south. The damage was done. Max Olk's warships above the hemisphere opposite Makalvar were itching to get into the fight, looking for something, anything to shoot at. Their AIs noticed the brief sensor flare, and one cruiser was ordered to investigate the unlikely contact. The first two sensor pulses returned nothing, having been aimed in the wrong direction. The third pulse got a solid return, and within seconds, active sensor beams from three ships had locked on to the soaring Panther, burning through the stealth field. A maser beam followed the sensor pulses, and the Panther bloomed into a fireball.
Oh, shit, I groaned.
Someday I will learn to resist the instinct to get out of my chair when I see something alarming on the main display, but not that day. Signal the Starforce to throttle back to minimum power to hold altitude. Someone behind me acknowledged my order.
Sir, Reed leaned closer and whispered, they won't reach orbit that way. We can't recover them.
We can't, but you can.
Sir?
Fireball, I need you in the pilot couch. Her eyes grew wide. We had served together long enough to understand what I meant.
No. No way. This is doable. This is insane, she hissed. The impact will be survivable.
Probably.
Probably. There are 19 people aboard each of those Panthers.
We're only going to recover Team Razor, and we only need the biscuit. Holy shit, when had I become so callous? And when it was needed for the mission. My job sucks.
Sir, I'm not a pilot.
You average 9 hours a week in the flight simulator. Most of that is training to fly this ship. Get in the pilot couch now. That's in order.
Clearing my throat, I announced, this is General Bishop. I'm assuming command of the ship, effective immediately, noted in the log. Fireball, do your thing.
She didn't like it. She followed orders, relieving the lead pilot and sliding into the couch. Colonel Frey, I called.
Sir? This was not in the plan.
It was not. Tell everyone to strap in tight. This will be a rough ride. She also guessed my intention.
The biscuit container is fastened to the rear of the cockpit bulkhead, she advised.
The strongest part of the Panther's hull.
Aim for that if you have no other choice.
Reed grimly acknowledged that statement with an emphatic nod of her head.
What about Team Tiger? Frey asked.
I bit my lip before responding. We'll have to come back for them. She knew that was bullshit. She also knew I didn't have any good choices.
Understood. We're already here. Sir?
Yes.
Do it fast, please. I feel we've run out of time.
On Reed's initiative, Valkyrie jumped. Not toward the planet. We emerged 2 light minutes farther away. The ship had constantly been maneuvering to maintain course and speed to match the course and speed Razor's dropship should have at the planned rendezvous point. Now, the ship had to slow down to match speed with a spacecraft that was below orbital altitude and moving too slowly. Without me needing to say anything that would be useless anyway, Reed fired the boosters so we could change course and slow down right fucking now rather than burning time Team Razor didn't have. Over the roar of the boosters, I shouted, Weps, when we get to the party, hit those cruisers.
Check,
came the reply, and the boosters cut off. We jumped again before I could take a breath to settle my stomach. Valkyrie emerged in the upper atmosphere behind the Panther and to the right of the spacecraft's flight path. There was no way the dropship could have flown into an open docking bay as we passed by at 3 meters per second, and our battlecruiser couldn't fly sideways in the airstream. Instead, a tough nanofiber recovery net extended out from a docking bay, 3 nets set in series in case the Panther missed the first one, or a net tore apart from the strain. We snagged it on the first try. The Panther was jostled hard, the net collapsing and drawing tight around it. Hollow fibers inflating and sticking together to form an airbag surrounding the entire hull. Some of the air leaked out when fibers touched hot parts of the dropship. Others took up the slack.
Got it, Reed grunted. Outstanding.
I had to raise my voice over the sizzling of maser cannons and the thumps of railguns, audible proof that we were engaging the enemy cruisers.
Reel it in.
Fireball, get us to jump altitude.
Gently, since we had a dropship dangling from a tether, Reed advanced the throttles, keeping the Panther on the opposite side from the approaching cruisers. The enemy had to know they were engaging Valkyrie, and they were not intimidated. They were eager for glory. The ship shuddered, the feeling distinct from the fluttering from the ship boring a hole through thin air. Have you ever dived to the bottom of a lake? You touch bottom and look up, and even though the surface is only 10 or 12 feet away, your brain screams oxygen now and you realize those 12 feet look impossibly far away? It was like that for us. Jump altitude was a long, long way above us, and I was beginning to have seriously second thoughts about my rash action. My latest rash action.
Sir, General Bishop,
a voice in my ear called. It was a crew chief in the docking bay.
The Panther is stuck. We can't pull it in.
What's the problem?
I think the engine pods are hung up on something on the hull.
Shit, I cringed. The people in the captive dropship had to be bouncing around like shoes in a dryer.
Is the cabin aligned with the docking bay door?
Yes, affirmative. Shear off the tail if you have to, but get the forward cabin inside ASAP. He wasn't surprised. He sounded relieved.
Pull the cabin in, understood.
He left the microphone open. Even through the armored windows overlooking the docking bay, I heard a horrific screeching, a loud bang, and a series of thumps.
Got it! Cabin is secure. Looks like everyone aboard survived.
Outstanding. Fireball, the package is inside. Pedal to the metal.
Pedal to the metal, aye.
A flick of her thumb ignited the boosters again, loud as hell from the shockwaves of sound being transmitted through the air around us. It would have been worse if the sound waves could have caught us. The hypersonic speed had the sonic boom trailing behind.
Admiral Allert?
His response was immediate.
Bishop, what the hell are you—
I need all of your ships to keep the enemy away from Valkyrie until we can jump. We have the package.
Package?
The what's-is, I explained. He hadn't heard the terms biscuit or collector, and there wasn't time to explain.
You have it. How—
I'll explain later. Can you assist? On the display, I saw that icons for enemy ships were moving in on intercept courses. They would reach us before Hammer Force could do much of anything. I really hadn't thought my snap decision through to the endgame.
We are— Bishop, my ships are out of position, and we're taking a beating here. If you had given me a heads up about what you were doing, we might have—
Bring in your reserves.
My reserves are fully engaged. The 14th Fleet was supposed to be—
A loud bang interrupted him.
Admiral.
Admiral Allert.
Joe, Skippy said.
His flagship took a hit. It has been a primary target since the three assault carriers were knocked out. Communications are down.
Shit. We'll have to do this the hard way, then.
Skippy's voice switched to my earpiece so only I could hear.
We won't do this the hard way. We won't do this at all. The numbers don't lie. Valkyrie can't reach jump altitude. Before we get there, the ship will take too many hits. I'm sorry. That's the truth of it. We are screwed.
Not yet, we're not.
Sir?
Reed asked, without turning in her seat.
Nothing.
Sir, Gasquet called for my attention. He was still seated along the back wall. My oversight.
Should we load the biscuit into a stealth drone? Send it away.
Okay, good suggestion. The biscuit won't do us any good if Valkyrie can't get away.
We could launch Skippy in a drone also.
Nuh-uh. The beer can shook his head. I am not going for that idea, no way.
Gasquet, thank you. Skippy, what's the alternative?
Have faith, Joe.
Faith in the awesomeness?
That also. I meant faith that everything will work out all right with a little help from our friends.
What the hell was he talking about?
I clenched my jaw. Everything wasn't going to work out all right. Nothing had gone right in Operation Olympic. All three assault carriers were out of action. The enemy had stopped shooting at the Flying Dutchman only because that ship was breaking apart as it fell into the atmosphere, and I didn't know whether anyone had gotten away from that ship. If they did, space around the planet was a hostile environment for little escape pods. For certain, Nagatha was going down with her ship. Team Sword was gone. The landing force had been vaporized in what was basically a megaton-level nuclear blast. Dave and Jesse and Shauna? I had sent them into a trap to maintain the ruse. Nothing was right about any of that.
What friends?
You know how the signals between paired Elder comm nodes can't be intercepted, but I can sort of detect bleed over from other paired nodes if they are used in the vicinity?
Yeah, so?
Hammer Force is using several pairs. I'm not talking about comm nodes being used by humans.
Who are—
Someone out there is using a pair of Elder comm nodes we gave to them.
That's when the cavalry arrived to save the day.
34 Rindaloo warships emerged from jump and quickly began engaging their enemy. Hammer Force had been knocked on its heels. Valkyrie had suddenly become the target of every ship in the 14th Fleet to the point where enemy ships on the other side of the planet were racing to jump altitude so they could get into the action.
General Bishop, this is Psychometric Advisor Gemontus of the 64th Gathering. The translator struggled with the odd Rindaloo military terms. How may we best render assistance? How many ships do you have?
As you humans say, what you see is what you get. We did not expect to engage a major enemy force here.
Shit. 34 ships would not win a victory that day.
We could still win a victory, if not a battle. Valkyrie jumping away with the Collector and Skippy could win the war for us, regardless of what happened later at Omaha.
Advisor Gemontus, Valkyrie must reach jump distance. Can you provide cover?
We can try. However, the enemy has greater numbers, and they now understand that your ship is the key to the entire battle.
Do what you can, please.
What the 64th Gathering could do was a lot. It just wasn't enough. We were within 7,000 kilometers of the hard line that marked where the planet's gravity well was shallow enough for an outboard jump field to form, and our approach to that line was agonizingly slow. The shields were taking hits so continuously the shocks felt like a regular vibration rather than individual events. The Rindaloo had moved in to shield our hull with their own ships, and their ships were falling out of line as they took hit after hit.
Sir, Reed half turned in the pilot couch. Boosters are offline. Main engine output is down to 17%. By the time we crawl out to jump distance, it won't matter. Skippy, can you do any of your usual magic here? Give us an assist?
The enemy is projecting damping fields, Joe. The effect is yes or no. Stop whining about it, I snapped.
The answer is shmaybe, if...
The lights flickered. Not the usual blinking of all lights at the same time. This was a wave of every system going dark and quickly back online, starboard side of the bridge to port. When the wave washed over me, I was dizzy enough to Ralph and blood pounded in my skull. As soon as it happened, it was gone.
Whoa, like that was gnarly. Bilby gasped.
What the fuck was that? I asked.
I don't know, Skippy admitted. Not anything good for us. Some type of Maxulk's sensor pulse? I'll have to investigate to...
If it didn't harm the ship, I do not care. Flatten space-time and get us out of here.
You can't just... None of us can do anything if the ship is torn apart. Can you do it or not?
Ugh, I hate this when you...
Listen, Dum-Dum, I can't guarantee where we will go.
Anywhere but here is good for me. Do it.
Ugh, you don't understand...
You never understand, and that never stops you. Bilby, jump on my signal. I must warn everyone this will be bad. 3, 2, 1.
It was as bad as he warned. Worse, actually, much worse. The jump itself wasn't bad. The distortion effect no more violent than a typical instantaneous transition from here to there. The bad part was where we jumped to. Just above the photosphere of a star. Omaharakon star. The display showed a solar flare arcing above us. Our flight path was taking us under the loop of hellish plasma, or whatever flares are made of.
Bilby, why did you jump us to-
Dude, like, I didn't do this. I aimed in the opposite direction. I don't know what-
An alarm blared, one that made my blood run cold. I knew that alarm. It was never supposed to sound.
Hey! Skippy shouted. What did you idiot monkeys do this time?
General, Gasquet warned what I already knew.
Skippy's escape pod has been ejected. It wasn't us, he added. This was an uncommanded action.
Launch the ready bird. I wasted no time.
Joe, don't. Skippy sighed. A dropship would only get scorched and melted out here.
Hey, stop that! The escape pod jets just fired. They're pushing me into the star.
Reed, I pleaded, out of ideas. She was struggling to keep Valkyrie from falling into the ball of fire below us.
Sir, I got nothing. It will be a miracle for us to get out of here.
Skippy, do some space-time warp, or Joe, there is nothing I can do.
Oh, this was perfectly planned, he groaned. That funky wave we experienced was not a Maxulk sensor, I know that now. The Outsider played us. It just played me. It wanted to know which Elder artifact we could use against it, and it wanted to take me out of the game. Now it understands the potentially deadly object is a Collector, and I am about to take a very long dirt nap in a star.
Ah. He sighed. This sucks. Joe, I'm sorry.
Skippy, there has to be a... Reed interrupted my worthless conversation.
Sir, it's no good.
She lifted her hands off the controls.
We don't have enough juice to avoid getting pulled down into the star. Not even, she anticipated my inappropriate joke, if we all get out and push. It's just a matter of time now. The engines are overheating and going offline. Okay, I looked around, out of answers. Reed, Gasquet, you two handle the ship. I relinquish command. I have to focus on recovering Skippy. Joe! Skippy shouted, though his voice already sounded far away. There is nothing you or anyone else can do to help me, but I can help you. How are you? Promise me one thing. Your foggy mush of a monkey brain will find a way to beat that asshole outsider without me. We're not doing anything without you. We will get you out of... To everyone, it has been an honor serving with you. Don't... He did. When we were in the star system where Valkyrie almost got trapped in the crushing, frozen atmosphere of the ice giant planet we called Snowcone, Skippy had caused the ship to suddenly stop dead in space by absorbing the substantial kinetic energy of our battlecruiser's momentum. At Omaha's star, he did the opposite. His own momentum was transferred to the ship. Not just the structure of the ship, that would have turned the crew into a thin layer of goo. Everything aboard the ship received the same boost of momentum. In the blink of an eye, we were racing away from the star at 1,900 kilometers per second. Holy shit. Reed lifted her hands off the controls, and not just because she was stunned as the rest of us were.
Sir, I think it's best that I not do anything right now.
Sir? She prompted me. Closing my eyes, I shook my head to get my brain working again. Right, sounds good. Skippy? I waited for a reply that never came. Skippy? Dude, Bilby sighed. He's like, gone. Gone? It's like Isaac Newton said, you know? Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And when he gave us that momentum boost, it took from his own momentum. He fell right down into that star's gravity well. I hate physics. Physics can be a bitch, Bilby agreed. Do you know where he is? Other than somewhere inside a yellow dwarf star, no. Oh, I hid my face behind my hands. Shit. Hey, I have a bit of good news. The outsider's malware that made us jump in the wrong direction and ejected Skippy's man cave? It was isolated to those two systems. Isolated to back up subsidiary systems that only became active when the jump drive coil spun up. That code is gone. I purged it with extreme measures. If I had waited when Skippy wanted to investigate that pulse, you would have found the malware? No, you made the right call. There was no time. We had to get out of there. Besides, we wouldn't have been looking for malware, especially not in the backup systems that weren't active then. But hey, I have some other good news. The shields are down hard, but I can have a stealth field active in a few minutes. Sure, whatever you think is best. I'll handle the ship, sir. Reed rose from the pilot couch and resumed her place in the command chair. Right. I slowly glanced around the compartment. Everyone looked away, avoiding my eyes. I had gotten thousands of humans killed. We had the Collector, but without Skippy, Operation Olympic was all for nothing. I waved a hand. Be in my office. Reed followed right behind me. I didn't realize that until I went to close the door and she caught it with a hand. Slipping through the doorway, she let the door close. Talk to me, sir. Reed, I got nothing. This wasn't just my greatest fuck-up, it was the biggest fuck-up of all time. I'm so proud of myself right now.
The outsider planted the Collector on Omaha to lure us there?
Huh? No way. I waited for us to get the thing so it would know which type of object we need to defeat it. Now if there are other Collectors it knows about, it will be certain to destroy them. Without Skippy, it doesn't matter anyway.
It learned we were coming to Omaha, and it withheld that intel from the Maxulks?
Yeah. An alliance of assholes. They deserve each other. It withheld the intel, then intercepted the 14th Fleet on the way to Parchland. Turned them around, and waited until the crucial moment. My mistake, my fatal mistake, was designating Valkyrie as the recovery ship for the Star Force. If I had assigned three random cruisers to the recovery job, the outsider might have still been guessing whether we had acquired what we came here for. Once Valkyrie jumped in, all it had to do was follow us. We led it right to the prize. So this is game over, sir?
What?
No, fuck that. The outsider wants us to give up, so we are not doing that. She flashed a smile. A sad little smile, but a smile anyway. She had wanted to hear me say we weren't giving up.
The merry band of pirates never give up, sir.
And that might be a sign of stubborn stupidity, but hell yes. What's our next move? Get the ship combat ready again if that is possible. We'll do our best. After that, we pull Skippy from the core of a star. She cocked her head.
Has anyone ever done that?
According to Skippy, no. Certainly not with the technology we have today.
Then how do we retrieve him?
Right now? I leaned my head back, overcome by a lifetime of weariness. I have absolutely no idea.
This is the end of Task Force Hammer, a Podium Audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more sci-fi space adventures, check us out at podiumaudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, X, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to Task Force Hammer, Book 17 of Expeditionary Force, produced by Emily Durr, written by Craig Allenson, performed by R.C. Bray. Text copyright 2024 by Craig Allenson. Production copyright 2024 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.